Well, thank you very much, and thanks for coming along. May I too also acknowledge the traditional owners of the land we meet on and pay my respects to their elders, both past and present. Chair, the Honourable John Von Dusser QC, obviously President of the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission, Professor Gillian Triggs, who is also speaking, all distinguished guests, thank you very much for coming. I had some fear and trepidation. I was told the speeches today were going to be, or I was going to be digitised, and I wasn't quite sure what that meant, but someone said it is for subsequent podcasting, but a very good thing. But it's I am very pleased to join you here today, and I thank the Commission very much for their work, but as part of that work, organising the seminar, and the event is called Coming In From the Cold on International Human Rights. And I think, regrettably, we have been in the cold. There's a bit of work to be done to come in from the cold, but we are committed to doing it. And indeed, this year marks the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And coincidentally, I think most of us would know that one of the drafters of the Declaration was Australia's Dr. H.V. Evatt, or Doc Evatt, who at the time was President of the United Nations General Assembly, an incredibly respected position, but he was also the leader of the Federal Labor Party, and he had been a Federal Attorney General, and most specifically, from my point of view, he was at the time the member for Barton, which, as President indicated, is my current seat. So that is a great honour that that I have to follow, at least electorally, in those footsteps. At the time that the relationship, at the time that Evatt was involved in drawing together the international community, working with the international community on the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the relationship between rights and peace and security was made profoundly apparent by the two world wars that had occurred, and unquestionably it was recognised that the abuse of rights, the failure to respect rights by governments, totalitarian regimes, internally but also across borders, obviously, in terms of the abuses that were committed through international violence. It was recognised that if we were going to have international peace and security, that there had to be respect for human rights both domestically and internationally. As I say, those philosophies were very much very instrumental in the formation of those important international documents. Similarly, the Rudd government is placing a very high priority on our commitment to fundamental human rights, and we are continuing to build a strong relationship with the United Nations, starting with our bid that the Prime Minister has announced recently for a seat on the Security Council of the United Nations. We've also demonstrated our commitment to re-engage with the United Nations to promote the rule of law internationally. This includes by commencing the long overdue process of becoming a party to a number of international instruments which were opposed by the former government. And as Attorney General, I consider promoting the respect for the rule of law to be one of the most important aspects of my job. Australia's strong and independent justice system helps underpin this task domestically, but there's a long way to go internationally, and I think we've stayed out of the action for far too long. The United Nations Charter did not make reference to the rule of law at the time, rather it focused on international peace and security. Indeed, at the time of the declaration, democratic governments based on the rule of law were in the minority. But I would think that in the 21st century, we could focus not only on the maintenance of international peace and security, but on justice for victims of human rights abuses wherever they occur, and most importantly, from preventing those injustices from occurring in the first place. Democracy in the modern context means far more than simply determining government according to the number of ballot papers that have been placed in a ballot box. History is littered with instances of democratically elected regimes being equally as harsh and oppressive as any totalitarian regime. The ingredients of democracy, I would suggest, in this day and age, in the 21st century, mean not only having a democratically elected government, but a government that respects fundamental human rights, the fundamental human rights of its citizens and indeed the international community generally. Without those two, I don't think a government can be regarded as truly a democratic government in the modern sense of that term. So in terms of promoting those rights internationally, we can either snipe at international institutions from the sidelines while other nations take the lead, or we can embrace the institutions in a spirit of cooperation. I remember in a speech I had a go at Gareth Evans, who described the government as the Howard government as standing on the side of the road like moo cows watching the passing parade. And I had a go at Gareth saying, well, Gareth, they aren't standing on the sidelines, they've actually run onto the road and obstructing obstructing the traffic going down the road. And I think in some instances, regrettably, that was the case. Gareth accepted in part, at least, my contest of what he had said. But the point is, we need to do more than sit on the sideline. Australia has, in the past, really, and it's a cliche, but it is very true, we have in the past played considerably above our weight, starting with, I suppose, the role that Evatt played internationally. But even if you compare the decade, including that period when Gareth Evans was Foreign Minister, when we achieved so much in the areas of nuclear disarmament, the promotion of human rights generally, the engagement with the international community, fostering peace in our region, obviously Cambodia being the most notable. And you compare the work that was done in that period to the work, or the absence of work, done in the last 12 years. And indeed, in the last 12 years, turning our back on fundamental human rights instruments in circumstances where we are attempting to improve, or at least notionally have the stated intention of improving human rights, in particular in our region. So, for example, one of the key international instruments that I'm passionate about is the optional protocol to the Convention on Torture. The previous government was opposed to ratification of that convention because it would do a terrible thing as a country in the 21st century, a modern democracy. It would have permitted international experts to have come into Australia to inspect our prisons and detention centres. What a terrible thing for a modern democracy in the 21st century to be concerned in the slightest about, in circumstances where, of course, we were making representations on behalf of our own citizens who were in jail in other countries in our region, trying to get them to improve their standards. We were refusing to have the international community being permitted to inspect our detention centres and prisons. So the Rudd government is committed to becoming a party to that optional protocol, and I think by doing so, pardon me, we can send an unequivocal message that Australia believes torture is completely out of place in a humane and civilised society, and indeed any human being detained in any circumstances is entitled to be treated with decency. The optional protocol establishes a subcommittee to conduct visits, as I've indicated, to places of detention, and that includes not only prisons and detention centres generally, but also includes the area where the previous government was so concerned about, that is the treatment of non-citizens in immigration detention centres. But again, if we are talking about respect for human rights, we are talking about respect for human rights generally, wherever they occur. And I believe such mechanisms would complement arrangements already in place in Australia that ensure detainees are treated with humanity and by internationally accepted standards. And indeed, I congratulate the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission for the role that they play in that regard. I've in terms of further developing the ratification of the optional protocol, I've written to colleagues in the states and territories seeking their agreement to take part in an assessment of the important protocol with a view to preparing a national interest analysis, and that national interest analysis will be presented to the Joint Standing Committee on Treaties, which in turn will consult with the broader Australian community, including non-government organisations, with a view to recommending ratification of that important protocol. I should note that our intention didn't go without notice. Last month, Australia appeared before the United Nations Committee Against Torture, and this was our first appearance before a treaty committee since coming to office. At the UN, our delegation stressed the Rudd government's commitment to the torture protocol and also for greater engagement with the United Nations generally. This appearance was a significant step forwards and reaffirmed the significant goodwill between Australia and the United Nations human rights treaties bodies. And indeed, in their concluding observations, which were released just last weekend, the United Nations Committee Against Torture commended several new initiatives of the Rudd government, and that included the government's commitment to become a party to the optional protocol. The other area is in respect to the Disabilities Convention, and again I commend the Commission for the work that has been done in this area. I can tell you that we're also working to fast-track the ratification process of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Over the past few months, we've consulted with the states and territories to ensure that Australia's legislation, policies and programs comply with the obligations in the Convention. We have also consulted with the disability sector, industry and other stakeholders interests in the area. A national interest analysis has been prepared by the Attorney-General's Department, and I've written to the Chair of the Joint Standing Committee on Treaties, Kelvin Thompson, to request that the committee undertakes expeditious consideration of ratification of the treaty before recommending to the Parliament that we do so ratify. We remain basically and fundamentally committed to implementing the standards of the treaty. We remain at the forefront of upholding the rights of people with disability, and this convention is part of the Rudd government's broader long-term commitment to improving the lives of people with a disability and their families. We'll also commence consultation with states and territories on the optional protocol to the convention shortly. Another important international instrument that has received some media coverage today is the optional protocol to the Convention for the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. Now again, the former government was opposed to ratification of this instrument because it would have done a terrible thing. It would have enabled Australian women to have appealed to an international body against government action. Not private sector or charity or church action, but against government action. To be so terrified of the rights of Australian women having redress before an international forum in respect to government action, again, in circumstances where we are trying to promote the rights of women in our region, one of the very worst regions for discrimination against women, indeed abuse of women, including obviously in the area of human trafficking. For us to be seeking to improve those standards, we're at the same time denying Australian women access to the international body was the utmost of hypocrisy. But we're committed to the protection and promotion of women's rights and making gender equality a reality in Australia. Obviously, if we are to promote the rights of women within our region, we need to at least set the example domestically. And in fact, today I think you may have seen some reports that that Tanya Plibersek, the Minister for Housing and Status of Women, and I have indicated today that the government has started also the necessary process of consultation with states and territories on Australia becoming a party to that optional protocol. Again, we believe that is a priority. Gender inequality, as I've indicated, is an enormous issue which affects every region in the world. There are all kinds of figures that show that the index, the social index, the economic index of countries that discriminate against women is is virtually in every sense inferior to those which treat women with decency. And as I've also indicated, we live in perhaps the worst region of the world in terms of human trafficking and abuse of women, and there is much we can do and should be doing and intend to do. The Rudd government is committed to engaging the international community in vigorously pursuing women's rights, as I've indicated. Moving through to the concluding comments, I would also congratulate the Commission for its work in the area of same-sex law reform, and I think it's a very, very practical report. The same-sex, same-entitlements report gave a number, brought to life instances of discrimination, which I think even the most stubborn of people found very difficult to justify as a matter of logic, fairness or decency. And that was a very, very important document, and I think more than anything that has been the driver of a commitment to reform of same-sex law reform. Last month, in fact, I announced that we're moving to implement our election commitment to end discrimination against same-sex couples in a wide range of Commonwealth laws. I think, indeed, the report identified some 58 instances. We had the department do even a more comprehensive analysis with the resources that they had available, and we found an additional 40 areas which we will be addressing. The reforms are long overdue, and the first tranche, at least, of the legislation I'm hoping to introduce next week. In fact, I signed this morning a document which hopefully will get it on in the Parliament next week, but certainly within the following week. So things are moving very quickly, and the goal is, depending on the cooperation that we receive from the opposition, if they're true to their word, we would like to see the first measures being in operation by the 1st of July. These changes will make a practical difference to the daily lives of a group of our fellow Australians who have suffered discrimination under Commonwealth laws for far too long, and significantly it will also remove discrimination that has applied to their children. In terms of a question that has been raised with me frequently, and in fact it was a topic that was keenly debated at the recent 2020 summit, is on the federal government's intention to undertake consultation on the recognition and protection of human rights and responsibilities. It's fair to say that many people are already making their views known on the issue, and there was no shortage of that at the 2020 summit, but it's great to see. It's entirely healthy for our democracy for there to be such an exchange of views. From my point of view, I'd like one or two colleagues to not be as dramatic or as inflammatory in some of their comments, but I think as there is a public inquiry that looks at these issues, I think it will determine two things. I think it will determine that even those who may oppose a formal Bill of Rights will acknowledge, if you press them, that yes, human rights are valuable. Every individual has human rights, and those rights should be acknowledged and respected. You then move into the next question, what is the best way of ensuring those rights are protected? But I think if we can get people to say that first step is a given, then we can get into a constructive and, as far as possible, unemotional but important debate. So I'm looking forward to many more in the Australian community having their voices heard, and I'll have more to say about the timing and form of that consultation in due course, but it's noted that the budget in fact included an allocation of funds for that consultation to take place, and we will be getting it underway second part of this year. Finally, what I wanted to address was the issue of lawmaking and policy development generally. Whatever results from consultation on the human rights process, the human rights consultation process, it will result in additional views on how we can better address human rights issues in federal lawmaking and policy development. In that context, I'll be working with my ministerial colleagues to ensure human rights consultation takes place at the policy development stage. Importantly, respect for human rights of our citizens must be at the heart of the legislative process, not just a formality or an afterthought of matters being raised after a bill is introduced into the Parliament. It is important that we ensure that the drafting of any Commonwealth legislation consistently takes account of the implications for our international human rights obligations. Every Australian citizen is entitled to that, more so, or equally so, we need to ensure that the international community respects our Parliament as a Parliament that fundamentally respects human rights. So, in terms of the government's relationship with HERIOC, I believe that the Commission plays and will continue to play a crucial role in safeguarding Australia's rights and freedoms. As I've indicated, I have great admiration for the work of the Commission, especially for its activities in education and public awareness, as is happening today, in its investigation of discrimination and human rights complaints, and in its professional contribution to the development of policy and legislation, and consistently doing so without fear and favour, and may that ever continue. Along with my colleagues in the Labor Party, and I might say a few also in the Coalition, I found it deplorable that the former government repeatedly tried to introduce legislation to weaken the independence of the Commission, despite the fact that it had bipartisan support in literally every committee that considered its work. So I look forward to working with the Commission in a renewed spirit of cooperation to further promote human rights in Australia. And in conclusion, can I say that I've mentioned a range of things that we're doing both internationally and domestically. There are many, many more, of course, but let me assure you that the Rudd government takes human rights seriously. We're committed to promoting human rights and the fundamental equality of all people. While we are certainly coming out of the cold on a number of key international instruments which were opposed by the former government, we're also working to ensure domestically we have a human rights system that does not just redress discrimination, but equally as importantly, prevents abuses from occurring in the first place. And thank you very much for coming along, and your views here today will be most welcome. Thank you.